Welcome to another episode of AI Willpower Business. Today, I've got a great guest on. I'm joined by Dr. Amir Mohammed. We talk about how he's founded multiple businesses, now in his AI SaaS platform, PromptTech.ai. We have a really interesting conversation about how businesses are implementing AI from someone who's in the industry just like me. What are some of the struggles people are seeing with LLMs? How we see AI moving in the future and more. It's a great episode and it's going to be a real industry insight if you want to know how AI is being adopted. Stay tuned. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of AI Willpower Business. Today we have a fantastic guest and our first other AI entrepreneur on the show, Dr. Amir Mohammed. Like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mohammed.
Dr. Yep. Amir Mohammed. I can edit this part up, so it's not a big deal. Yeah. Amir is the founder and director of PromptTech.ai, an AI SaaS startup helping businesses centralize their LLM usage within Teams while enhancing their prompting. Amir is also a seasoned entrepreneur and has an impressive background. Some notable mentions include completing his doctoral studies at the University of Waikato, being a scientist at Scapespec, where he helped revolutionize stormwater management, co-founding and serving as a business advisor at the tech startup ReckonPin. Amir, so it's so great to have you on. How are
Thank you
doing
you.
Today?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah.
Not bad?
Yeah. I walked to the studio, so.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Close by?
Yeah, I live in Grafton, so.
Perfect. Yeah. Cool. So, yeah, Amir, you know, with all the guests, I normally like to start off by giving the audience a little bit of backstory on who they are so they can, you know, get to know you, and then we'll move on, get into prompt tech and what you're doing there. Yeah. So you're an entrepreneur. You founded your own AI SaaS, which we will talk about later. Could you please start, like I said, by just giving me a bit of backstory on the stuff you've been involved in and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. So... Yeah, I'm Amir. I'm 36 years old.
Yep.
Yeah, and I got my bachelor in civil engineering. I got my master in environmental engineering. And I came here in 2017 to do my PhD in chemistry department. So quite a journey. I mean,
quite a diverse.
Yeah. So, yeah, as I said, I came here in 2017 to do my PhD at Waikato, and the topic was about tracing fertilizer drift contaminants in wider environments. So going from dairy farms or farms going through soil and through groundwater and wider environments. So. Yeah, actually, it was a Minister of Business-funded project that our team was doing. So my PhD was a part of that Ministry of Business Smart Idea Fund. So, yeah. What should I say?
So quite different to what you're doing now.
Yeah, it is. Actually, going back, like I started... my journey in tech industry in 2018.
Yeah.
Before that, I didn't even know the term startup.
Really?
Yeah, I had no idea what a startup is.
Wow.
And that was the first time that I come with an idea and share it with my friends and start building some platform, some project, some MVPs. And before that, I had no idea. And I'm not coming from a... business family background, my father was employee, my mother was an employee. That entrepreneurship wasn't actually in our family.
Okay.
So I'm probably the first one.
First generation.
Yeah, the first generation entrepreneur.
Okay.
In my family, and I'm the first generation of immigrant as well.
Really?
So, the first idea actually was the first startup that I was working on was we created a platform around we wanted to authenticate the location and time of recorded contents.
Okay.
Videos, photos, audios, doesn't matter. And the reason behind that was I found a gap in the market that Actually, I saw a video that was actually promoting a propaganda against a specific tribe in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that, I said, okay, I have no idea where that video was recorded, where that video was, when that video was recorded.
Yeah.
And I was trying to search the internet to find the source of that video. And I got with the idea that, okay, we probably need a tool to actually validate the source of recorded contents.
Yeah.
And either watermark it with unique identifiers or some sort of identifier so you can check the source of those videos.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time that I had a startup idea.
Okay.
And I shared it with my friends from high school. And yeah, we start building something. Okay. Yeah. And since that, it changed, pivot again and again. Like my life actually pivot.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not just the startup that pivot. Like your life sometimes pivots in directions that you can't even think of.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you were doing your studies at this time in...
Yes.
Which engineering was it? So you were doing your studies in engineering
In science department.
Science department.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I started in 2017.
Yeah.
And sadly that project was COVID impacted. And it delayed, and I finished my PhD in November 2022.
Okay.
And a few weeks before COVID, actually, I was getting ready to hand in my thesis.
Yes.
And suddenly everything goes
wrong.
And all the labs shut down across New Zealand, and some of my sample stuck in a few labs. So long story,
yeah.
I couldn't finish my PhD. So I talked to my supervisor and said, hey, is it okay if I go and find a job in the meantime?
Yeah.
And he was happy, and yeah, I got my first job in environmental science.
Mm-hmm.
I was working as a research and developer scientist at Escape Aspect, which is a startup from a traditional industry, landscape supply industry. So I was developing engineered soils for that company.
Okay.
So something opposite of my PhD.
Yep.
In my PhD, I was looking how the contaminants are going through soils. Now I was creating solutions to actually stop contaminants from going through the soils. So I created a range of stormwater solutions.
Mm-hmm.
For the industry that has been installed around Auckland, Kay Road, Vineyard Quarter, and other places.
Wow.
So yeah, I created our startup was creating soils that can filter stormwater,
mm-hmm.
and there were criteria around it. So
yeah.
to make sure the water goes fast enough to actually filter the water,
mm-hmm.
Through soil, and also fast enough that it doesn't flood.
Yes.
And also slow enough that it filters the storm. So,
wow.
sometimes I even wondering how I can connect the dots in my life, how I can connect civil engineering to those skills that I get, programming. And to be honest, that's what I found interesting in multidisciplinary areas,
mm-hmm.
that you connect different skills from different backgrounds to create a solution. And working in that company actually gave me that possibility.
Yeah.
So I brought skills from civil engineering, I brought a skill from environmental engineering,
mm-hmm.
chemistry, even programming, the electrical engineering, I had a little bit of knowledge about that, mechanical engineering. So I bring all of them together to create a system.
Yes.
So that's what I found it interesting. And I love working in that startup company.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very, very cool, yeah. Man. So, yeah, very unique, broad skill set.
Yep.
And, I mean, that can sometimes be the best way to actually start something else because you can apply unique opinions that, especially people that are always just in one industry, might not be able to see, right?
No.
So
I was studying, back to your question. Yeah, okay. I was studying. I had a startup working. And I started working for another company. So, yeah. I mean, sometimes I found myself working like 16 hours a day.
Yeah, I bet. Doing all that at once must have been quite crazy. Did you find it difficult to be doing different things at the same time? Would you recommend that people do that? Or do you think it's best that they focus on one thing at a time?
I can easily switch between tasks. If someone can find it that they don't actually get bored switching between tasks or get distracted by switching between tasks, I recommend it because if you are working from 8 to 5 for a company, you might not have enough time to build something or a startup or an MVP for yourself to actually release in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So you needs to take all your free times, weekend times. When you come back from home, from work, you have to switch easily from your job and work on your startup.
Get straight back into work.
Yeah. So it's not possible if you don't do it.
Yes.
So you have to be able to switch easily between after you come back from home and shut down everything and start another project right away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it reminds me of what both my last two guests, Bill and Tom, have both said, you know, and they're entrepreneurs themselves. They've been involved in businesses. Yeah. And they said, if you want to start a business, the number one thing you have to be is passionate about what you're doing.
Yes, exactly.
Because you've got to be willing to put in those extra hours when no one else is, right? Because when you're the founder, especially, or involved in the startups, it's not 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, whatever it is. It's until the task gets done and you can chill out.
So you are giving up your weekends. You are giving up your Netflix time, your relaxing time, your hobbies, even your savings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite like...
It's a big risk.
Yeah, you have to take the risk to earn big.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you were involved in Rec and Pin on the side and that was your startup.
Yeah.
Which you found from, like you said, a video authentication. Yep. You wanted to find out what happened with... So what made you decide to move away from doing that and also working with ScapeSpec to AI and wanting to start a SaaS? Because, you know, it is quite it is quite the transition. So what caught your interest in that, if you don't mind?
So not only my PhD was COVID impacted,
my
first startup was also COVID impacted. So we created that platform and we released into the market on it was March 2020. 5 days after we released, the first lockdown happened.
Ouch!
Everyone stopped.
Yeah,
no one was. Buying SaaS products. No one was investing in SaaS products. And it was so hard to actually find the market fit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of my first mistakes in a startup environment was that I created a solution before I actually find the market fit.
Absolutely.
And people think that, okay, I have a cool idea. And it's a problem, and it's solving an actual problem. But does it mean that there is someone in the market that's paying for it?
Yeah, completely and right.
That COVID was on top of that.
Yeah.
So the idea was we had a B2B business model for that one. For example, we wanted to sell it to insurance companies. Insurance companies in New Zealand, you call... insurance company and say, hey, I want to get a car policy, and they don't ask for proof of condition.
Mm.
And guess how much is the insurance fraud in New Zealand?
A lot.
Over $800 million a year.
Wow. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Based on my calculation and my research, probably like 30-40% of that is claiming for pre-existing
damages. Wow.
So see you how much you can save in this market.
Uh-huh.
But also at the same time, maybe insurance companies doesn't want to actually change the process because of the customer experience.
Mm.
So it make it like probably the pros and cons of that solution might not fit in their market.
Mm-hmm.
Or like other industries. So I couldn't actually find that
right product market right, fit.
Yeah, and or my first customers to actually leverage that to expand it.
Yeah,
and
with COVID, it was just difficult.
And New Zealand market is much smaller than North America.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why actually the business is now moved to Canada. My co-founder moved it to Canada. So he's still working on that startup, but I transitioned into a role of business advisor and I kind of exit from that startup. But he's continuing that that idea and that platform.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was COVID impacted, and I couldn't get it off the ground. And that time I said, okay, maybe I need to work for another company first, get their skills, get the knowledge. And yes, it wasn't necessarily related to the SaaS products that I was building. That startup EscapeSpec was coming from a traditional industry, like landscape supply. But I learned a lot. I learned a lot from my boss. I learned a lot from our interaction with customers.
Yes.
Because by the end of the day, all businesses, all industries are following the same fundamentals.
Yeah.
And that quiet learned, I learned a lot from working in that job.
Yeah.
And that helped me to get the ideas and move on to the next phase.
Okay.
So that journey is actually used. Now you start connecting the dots.
Yes, I see. Yeah. I see. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I can relate to a lot of that because, you know, I've been involved in other businesses. I was actually involved in a landscaping business as well. So kind of a similar story. But it was, you know, I didn't really know much about landscaping, that wasn't where my strengths were. I was always more interested in the digital and the marketing side of things. But there was a lot that I learned from that experience, even though we didn't really make too much money out of it. I was still at high school, you know. We didn't make too much money out of it. It was still learning the fundamentals, how to deal with customers, what works, what doesn't, you know, the fundamentals, exactly the same way as you say it. And I've applied that to my business that I'm doing now. So please continue. Tell me, how did you start PromptTech?
So after I finished my PhD in October 2022, and in the phase that I submitted my thesis, and I was waiting for the external referees to give the feedbacks. I had the feeling, I did a PhD. Okay, what did I do to my life? Why did I get a PhD in environmental science and now I'm moving to tech?
Yeah.
And I was questioning all my decisions in the past.
Oh, no.
And I said, okay, maybe that's the best time for me to make the changes.
Okay.
I'm passionate about high-tech industries, and I love environmental science.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I'm good at it.
Yes.
Sorry for bragging. But I'm good at it. But at the same time, I see the futures going around different industries, and I want to be involved in those industries.
Mm-hmm.
AI, high-tech was interesting topics for me.
Absolutely.
And just before ChatGPT was released, I started learning programming. After my PhD, I had that PTSD kind of thing. So, okay, what should I learn? And I started learning programming. Some skill that I didn't have when I was developing Rack & Pin, and now I get it. So it helped me a lot moving pieces faster.
Got it.
So, and also I started learning project management professional. I took a project management, both of them was Udemy courses, mm-hmm. actually.
Okay.
So I picked a Udemy course in programming. I picked a Udemy course in project management, agile environments, and learned a few things. And then ChatGPT released. I found it interesting. I start using it from like week one or week two after they released. They released that, the version 3.5 when mm-hmm. they released that.
Yep, I remember.
So everyone was talking around about ChatGPT and it can talk to you. And I said, okay, fine, I'll give it a try. And the first hours that I was working on it, I found the gap. The gap that, okay, the way that you talk to the these large language models affect the response that's coming from them. So, and I had no knowledge around how these the LLM architecture works,
mm-hmm.
but I saw that something is missing here. Okay, if I change my wording and ask my question another way, it gives me another answer. And I said, okay, probably there are ways to improve the output. And I start learning and searching the internet, how I can improve my inputs from inputs to ChatGPT and how to get a better output,
yes,
better response.
Uh-huh.
And also at the same time, I found that most of the use cases that early adopters were using is writing emails, summarying, or basic tasks that, there are still like a quite big task,
mm-hmm.
that boring, they're like repetitive tasks that you can leverage, but these models are more capable,
yes.
than normal writing ChatGPT, like writing 100%. An email.
And I think so many people right now are still only using ChatGPT for their emails, right?
I mean, of course, I'm still doing that, but there are more capable
that people don't even know, right?
Yeah, they can actually analyze text at larger scale. Some things that we didn't have in the past. And that opens up lots of opportunities. Lots of things that you were doing in your mind in the past. Now you can actually put it in a prompt and the AI model goes and do it for you. So I found that gap and I start working around it. Now I have the programming knowledge.
Yeah.
I start building an MVP and I get two customers, friends and families.
Okay.
And I start building around those two customers. So my first customers was actually, it was a company doing employee satisfaction programs, employee server programs. Okay. And they were... traditionally, they were analyzing text and comments coming from employees of a third company generating word cloud around those comments coming from another company and offering them how to change their cultures, what's the gossip in the company, or like what people don't like about the company, or where they can actually improve,
mm-hmm.
or so traditionally they received like thousands of comments from big industries and running all those comments and trying to find the keywords of every comment wasn't easy for them.
No.
Like spending weeks to just analyze the data, and they didn't have enough time to actually give the real value to the business, which was the package, the offers, how to improve there. So now they free up time by running it through AI and with accuracy of 90-95%. It wasn't 100.
No.
But they had enough time to actually proofread it and make a better contribution to the project. Give the real value to the industry, mm-hmm. to their clients. So that AI was freeing up time for you. It's not there to, like, I think most people are worried about AI taking jobs. No, it's not taking jobs. It's freeing time for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Increasing your efficiency.
Increasing your efficiency. Mm-hmm. And give you abilities that you didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it was fascinating. And one thing that I was pushing to the industry, to that for the customer, I built for the customer, was the ability to actually create those workflows that mm-hmm. they had. So they receive a database, they analyze it, they extract words, they extract the comments, they created hashtags. So all those steps now could be done by AI.
Automated.
Yeah. But I mean, now you can create an app without need to code.
Yes.
Because you can talk to AI.
Yeah.
And you can write a command, a prompt in human language instead of programming language. Now that's the opportunities that opens up.
Mm-hmm.
Large language models opens up. So I created the dashboard for those customers, but soon I realized that, okay, they need to be in the power to change that workflow easily.
Yeah.
Because that industry is going so fast, introducing solutions on weekly basis,
mm-hmm.
that building a pre-made solution actually doesn't solve anything. And there should be in power to change their workflows. Because as we iterate and pivot in the industry, all those companies also pivot and iterate their workflows.
Mm-hmm.
They changes.
Yeah.
So what I found is that I need to create a tool instead of a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So I start working around a tool, a builder, a form builder. To give you a little bit of background about PromptTech. So PromptTech is an AI team space and prompt engineering platform.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I named it.
Okay.
The AI team space is solving the problems about collaboration. People were working in isolated environment.
Mm-hmm.
Employees were working in their personal ChatGPT environment. The transparency, the trust, data privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies ban ChatGPT on their platform, on their systems. If they think that their employee won't use ChatGPT on their phone, they're wrong. It makes their job easier. It makes their life easier. It frees up time. So banning ChatGPT actually wasn't a solution. And I saw that. And I said, okay, organizations need a tool to collaboratively work in an environment that they can control what's being shared with AI. I mean, of course, it doesn't solve concerns, but now they have control on how the data is being distributed in AI. Mm-hmm. So that AI team space was around that idea. And the prompt engineering side of it was about the idea that writing an email is not the only thing that ChatGPT
absolutely
can do.
Absolutely.
You can create workflows to streamline tasks. So these are the two main basics of PromptTech.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I find that very interesting. It's clearly like the entrepreneurial mindset is there. You know, you start playing with it and then hours later, you've already seen the opportunity, right? I completely understand how you would have thought that. And then, you know, I think you did... it was really smart doing the product market fit from the start, right? Getting with meeting with potential customers from the start, finding out what they want, and then you know it's evolved from there. Like I've had a very similar story with my business so far as well. I find it really interesting. You know, a lot of businesses. I saw a stat. I can't remember what it was, but you know, talking about how these companies that have banned out all LLM usage and stuff like that, they're still being done through an off way that's not right, which is not secure. Businesses don't know what's getting inputted into it. And then, you know, there's obviously a massive security risk there.
Yep.
So centralizing it was the first step. But I think about prompt tech, the really interesting thing is, you know, these cards and whatnot. Because from my, you know, from what I've seen and how I've seen other people use ChatGPT, whether that's some of my friends that are doing their studies, or, you know, can't say who on podcast, obviously, but through friends that are doing their studies, through family members I see using it for work, you know, really, they don't know how to prompt correctly at all. And they think, oh, AI can't do this. They put in like a one sentence prompt, it doesn't work, AI can't do this, and then they just give up, you know? Yep. Which is crazy because really when you start to understand these technologies and you understand the LLM architecture, you can get so much more out of these models. And I think that's, you know, one of the big values that your product is providing, right? So could you talk to us a little bit more about these prompt cards and
That's actually a big gap in the market. If I talk about the access barriers in the market, AI adoption index. So there is a research by IBM and Datacom, two separate research. I mean, I combine it together to give an insight about what are the AI barriers, what are the access barriers in New Zealand, and I compare it to global market. So data privacy was on top. 75% concern in New Zealand, and the global was also the highest. Yeah. And transparency and trust was another one. And I totally understand it. Businesses are trying to safeguard their IPs. And they are spending millions or billions of dollars to create that IP and sharing it with AI. You don't know how where that data goes. But those large language model providers like OpenAI, Anthropic, Mistral, they change their, like they write a privacy policy around that and saying that anything connected to our platform through API, all the inputs that going through API won't be used to train for the next generation of model. Now, what's the risk for businesses? The businesses, their employees are using free version of ChatGPT, which OpenAI said that we might use that data to train the next generation. Okay, now, either build a platform for your business that's connected to these AI solutions, or use a platform that's connected through API. And you can easily follow that privacy policy and don't worry about your data. But still, some of the organization still can't trust. But, I mean, some information and some data is super sensitive. For example, healthcare data or financial data. You don't know if there might be a mistake that someone share a credit card number in a document with ChatGPT or in or another large language model. We don't know what can go wrong in the future. That's a big question for everyone, even for me.
Yeah.
But we there are ways to go around it. For example, getting an open source model instead of the traditional models. Mm-hmm. And I see the futures in open source models because you actually get a model, train it around your industry, and use it and like it's like a baby that you grows up like with you.
Yeah.
And the other gap was the one that you mentioned. People lack skills to use AI. Or even businesses lack skills to implement AI. Mm-hmm. They can't find the use cases. In those surveys, businessmen actually reported that they feel that they are uneducated around AI. I mean, it's not new, but it's new to most of people.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like AI has been around like for 10 years, 20 years. And we have been using it in our apps or in our life without knowing that AI, but it has started kicking off.
Yes.
They don't know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So they are trying to find the use cases. And that is a little bit tricky. What can I do with AI? And if you don't know how the AI models work, how those large language models work. You can't actually leverage it to your business. Mm-hmm. And that gap, or that prompting, writing a prompt gap, I start thinking, okay, if the employees, if the businesses doesn't know how to use AI, me creating a solution or a platform or a tool doesn't solve anything. They still cannot use AI. They don't know how to write a prompt. That's why I shift my business a little bit. I mean, okay, just it's a journey. I created a course, a Udemy course, giving back to the community. Nice. So Udemy taught me a lot. And giving back, I did a tour of research around the large language models architecture, how it works, how it process, what are the terminology. For example, tokens or the parameters, temperature, mm-hmm, what are those terminology mean and how it works. And I find that this is the first step to actually adopt AI across your business. So someone in your industry, a developer, an AI engineer, or an engineer or software engineer, needs to know about AI so they can help you, or you can get consultation from outside.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone knows how these platform works, they can actually leverage to your use cases, and they can find how your workflow can be streamlined, mm-hmm, to free up times for you. And I created that Udemy course, and I released it. And I found it that the students, those who signed up, loved it.
Really?
And they found that gap. And comparing that gap, New Zealand market to global market,
mm-hmm,
businesses in global market, only 20% of the businesses reported concern about lack of employee with the right AI skill. I mean, hopefully it's a right number.
Wow.
But only 20% in the IBM survey reported lack of employees with the right AI skill. Comparing to New Zealand, it was 70%, 50% gap.
Wow.
Even if those numbers are wrong, still there is a huge gap.
Yeah.
So saying that, okay, New Zealand industry might be ready to adopt AI, but their employees are not ready.
Absolutely.
So there is a lot to do in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of opportunities, not just for me, for anyone, all those entrepreneurs seeing this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
There are gaps in teaching AI and in finding those use cases, consulting businesses that they can explore in this environment. 100%. So I encourage them to actually look for these solutions.
Okay. We'll leave a link to that, yep, Udemy course in, yep, the description.
Yep.
So if you're out there and you're looking to enhance your prompting skills, yep, that's a good place to start. And I know that it's good because I remember when I went to watch you speak, Amir, at the New Zealand AI show,
yep,
a couple of weeks ago, I brought one of my friends there who didn't know much about AI. But then afterwards, he was like mind blown. He's like, I didn't realize that's how it works. Da, da, da. And I've seen, you know, just being around him and stuff, that his prompting skills have got so much better. And now, yeah, he can use AI, yeah, a lot more. So, yeah, I think really, like, it is one of the most crucial skills that, yeah, people should be learning,
yeah,
going forward into the future. Because there's this old saying that I say all the time, you know, you're not going to get replaced by AI.
But get replaced by someone who knows how to use AI.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, because at the end of the day, if there's two people, one person can use AI, one person can't. The person that can use AI can do everything,
yep,
but probably, you know, five times more at the, yep, same time, because they're not doing all these manual tasks that could be automated, right? So I think it's a really crucial skill, and I think, yeah, it's very interesting. I also, yeah, found it interesting to say, to see that that's how your business has pivoted, you know,
yeah,
where it's also on the education side of things, because I don't know about those stats in particular, but I definitely would believe that it's, yeah, a very, very high number of,
yeah,
people that don't know how to properly use AI, yeah, because, yeah, I've been working with businesses and employees that have, yeah, been doing it, and I've seen as well firsthand.
Yeah. The founder of NVIDIA actually had an interview a few weeks ago, Jensen Huang, and he mentioned that we used to tell kids to learn how to program like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now he said that, okay, things shifted. Now we are creating platforms that are capable of talking to human in human language. Mm-hmm. And people need, like, we need to create platforms that people don't need to program anymore. And the programming language should be human language. So there was limitations to do this, like to make programming language in as a human language in the past. But now we have the opportunities to make that. And I believe, what if we can we find ways to talk to AI and we learn how to talk to AI so it understand us, mm-hmm. it understand what we need and what we want to achieve. So the AI help us. Mm-hmm. You see, so we know how it works and it gives us back.
Yes.
So we need to find a way to be able to talk to AI models.
Yes.
And that's the prompt engineering skill or prompting skill or whatever you want to name it.
Yes, you're completely right. There is a gap in the market there that you're clearly filling, right? Is knowing how people are going to ask it and how the AI needs to interpret it and then bridging that gap, right? I've seen the interview with Jensen and I found it very interesting as well. I mean, when I started my business, I had a very, very basic understanding of coding. I didn't know much at all. But then, you know, through using LLMs and through experimenting, I started picking up a lot very quickly. And I was able to build, you know, it started off with just like API calls and stuff like that. But then I ended up building on those skills and, really refining and getting a much better understanding through LLMs. So
I think me and you had the same
journey. Sounds quite similar, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Landscape, then programming, then creating an AI solution. Yeah.
What are we going to do next? One of us needs to get a massive exit and then hopefully we'll follow.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Okay, cool. So, PromTech, it's evolved, been through many different things. What I want to ask you is, so you've worked with a couple different businesses now. How have they been founding it? How have they found it? And how has this led to the business changing, evolving? Because this is what happens in startups, right?
Yep.
Could you talk to us about that a little bit?
So we are in that transitional phase at the moment. Mm-hmm. The industries are exploring.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that change control isn't easy for most of the businesses.
Yes.
And all industries will get impacted. I mean, most of industries get impacted. And they are exploring solutions at the moment. They might be not ready fully to adopt that solution because of those gaps in the market, the employees, mm-hmm. The use cases, or even the costs. Because, using AI will save time for you. So you save a bit of money, mm-hmm. but also it costs you to run those AI solutions. To me, it's not even comparable. No. The amount of money
time
that
you save,
time and money you save, it's not even comparable to the cost, even remotely close. But still, it's an unknown for most of the businesses. And they are trying to explore. So actually, I had an exhibitor booth in a M2 AI
That's
summit
right.
almost two months ago. And what I found that 40, 50 people walked into my booth. And after that, I put all those industries in a paper. And I found that 30 unique industries walked into my booth and asked me questions. 30 different industries. And some of industries I couldn't even think of that they are looking for AI solutions. Mm-hmm. They are exploring AI solutions. And after that, I start thinking, okay, how can I help them?
Yes.
There are a few industries at the moment that are in the front,
mm-hmm.
Early adopters. Marketers, content creators, they are using AI solutions, but probably maybe normal ChatGPT can do their jobs.
Yeah.
freelancers. But big organizations are, I'm not saying that they are hesitant, but they are still not there yet. They want to find answers to all those concerns, the privacy, data protection, the governance, the governance inside there, who has access to AI and who has access to different level of AI. So that's one of the features actually PropTech offer.
Okay.
Different access levels to different models available. Like we have five large language models in our platform. And the reason for that, because different models have different capabilities and they are trained on different data sets. Yes. So you might find one that not actually the best result, give you the best results in, let's say, marketing, but another one might give you a good result. Actually, that's one of the cases. Like I was creating a dashboard for a nutritionist and I found that one of the models that I don't want to name actually offered kebab for breakfast.
Is that
so
right?
Like as a diet, as an offer for a diet. Okay, let's see how we can solve it. It's because of the data that it's being trained on or the capability of the model. So changing that model to another model, which I don't name it again. solve the problem.
Absolutely.
It was trained on different cuisine.
Yes.
Even international cuisine, which the other model didn't have. So you need to explore those models to find the best solutions for you. And those industries, first, they haven't tried all the models. They might try, for example, ChatGPT and see that, okay, it doesn't solve my problem, but maybe another model will solve. So we are through that transitional phase that all the businesses are exploring their options. And this is necessary.
Yes.
And if we jump over that phase, everything can go wrong. If we don't go through that phase step by step, exploring and answering all those concerns, things can go wrong in the future. So what I tell to my clients that it's a foundation.
Yeah.
If you set it right, you can build up. But if you skip that part, it won't be safe in the future. So better to going step by step, exploring the options and adopt and make the changes in the meantime.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think businesses need to start dipping their toes in AI, right? Start getting just an idea of how they work at least. It's crucial because really, like, I think it's inevitable now that it's going to be implemented everywhere in the next decade, right? Especially with stuff like Copilot and the Apple intelligence coming out. AI is right in front of your face all the time now. So businesses really need to start going about it with the right practices in the secure ways. Like you said, like the integration with the API is really important, which a lot of people don't even know. I mean, I think I agree with what you said. It's important to start doing it and also not jumping to these super complex solutions. I mean, I know I've spoke with a lot of businesses now and they've said, oh, well, this guy said that he could build us an AI that does absolutely everything. It does this, and they're promising the world. And these solutions, they're not impossible, but I think the development is completely underestimated for what it takes to get there, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's, like you said, starting with the basics, getting used to it, understanding how it works, and then from there building up as you get some experience with it. So, yeah, I completely agree. So what do you think, the next question I'm going to ask is, what do you think is right now the biggest barrier to businesses not using AI other than the security factor? So, you know, I think a lot of businesses are worried. There's so many different options. They don't know what to go down. They don't have the time to put the resources, especially smaller businesses, don't have the time to put the resources and time into finding out which one is the best. What do you think stopping them, and what do you think the best way they should go about it is?
Two things.
Yeah.
One is that lack of knowledge about the use cases that I talked about.
Yeah.
But also a fear about how I can actually move my employees to adapt to the new workflows. And most of people are actually concerned about that. Okay, AI is going to take my job. And, AI is taking the whole world. That's a case that with the introduction of any technology, it happens. Mm-hmm. And going back 20-something years ago, when internet was introduced, people were concerned that, internet is going to take jobs. Which, if I say no, it's a lie. Mm-hmm. It will take few jobs. It automate a few jobs. But also, any industry, any technology create new jobs.
Absolutely.
So back then, we were able to do, we were sending mails. Then we had the opportunity to send emails.
Yes. We're not going to need postmen anymore.
Yeah, but still, we are delivering posts. Absolutely. Packages. Before that, there was no online the shopping.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it created jobs. It didn't actually remove postmans. Mm-hmm. It changed the workflow, and it created new opportunities. So any industry, any technology will do that. Probably internet, it took like 10, 15, or 20 years to do that. Mm-hmm. For AI, it will be much faster.
I agree.
And that's one of the biggest concern that how I can adapt to that change. Mm-hmm. And that happened through the history again and again. Going to 40, 50 years ago back, teachers protest against having calculators, math teachers protest against students using calculators.
Yes.
When was the last time you multiply something on a piece of paper?
I know. I'll never forget a teacher telling me, well, you know, you can't use a calculator because you're not going to have a calculator in your pocket all the time. And now look, we've all got these phones right here.
Yeah. And the same thing happened to AI.
Yeah.
There will be a time in the future that you can think of your life without AI.
Yeah.
Now I cannot, at this stage, I cannot think of my life without internet. Mm-hmm. No internet means no Netflix.
Yes.
No internet means no online shopping. No internet means no Uber.
Yes. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
No internet means that you don't actually broadcast your podcast.
No, that's true.
So, see? And in the future, the same thing happened for AI.
I agree. And I think, you know, people are getting used to how fast technology is getting implemented and stuff like that. And I think AI is going to be just that much faster. Yeah.
So it transitioned all the industries and it creates new jobs that people need to actually fill those jobs. For example, robotic maintenance. Mm-hmm. Or more jobs for data scientists, for data analysis. Or creating new AI solutions, or maintaining AI solutions, or supervising AI, or ethical considerations around AI. So it creates new jobs.
Yeah.
And if I say that no one get displaced by AI, that's a total lie. It will happen, but it creates new jobs, and it creates more jobs than the jobs that it's taking.
Absolutely. Yeah, very, very insightful take there from you, Amir. And I agree with what you said. I think people shouldn't be too worried because, you know, really what you should be trying to do is learning how to use AI rather than getting worried about how to replace it. So this has been a really fun conversation. It's been great. We've had a lot of interesting talks about AI, but unfortunately our time is coming to an end. So before we wrap up, I have a question to ask you that I ask every entrepreneur guest that comes on, and that is, what is, if you could nail it down to one single piece of advice that you would have to young entrepreneurs out there, either trying to start their own business, have just got into a startup, maybe even specifically those who want to get into AI, what's some advice you would give? No pressure.
I'm a young entrepreneur. I started recently. I'm not in the position to actually advise other entrepreneurs. But I always remember something, a quote that says that luck is preparation meeting opportunity. Mm-hmm. all those overnight success has a history. It doesn't happen in one night. You have to prepare. You have to stay awake overnight and build your dreams. So that's something I keep reminding myself.
Mm-hmm.
A startup and being an entrepreneur is not a job. It's a lifestyle. And you have to pay for it to
mm-hmm.
get it in the future.
Yes.
So right. That's what, if I want to give some advice, if you are passionate about something, start working on it. And start working today. And in 3-2 months or years, you will see the fruits.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's some very great advice. Yeah. Thank you for that. I mean, I think that's great. I think so many people are disheartened, especially now when you see people on the internet claiming that they're making money overnight, but it's ridiculous. You know, it's a slow grind and it takes time. But if you're the type of person that's willing to put in the hours, you know, ready to not take anything out for months and years, then you can be a successful entrepreneur, right? Okay. So Amir, thank you so much for joining us today, sharing your incredible journey, insights and expertise. It's been great. Before we wrap up, could you feel free to tell everyone how they could find out more about Prompt Tech, get involved, or even your Udemy course? What's the best way for them to reach you?
So, yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, and they can follow up on my LinkedIn.
Okay.
I shared a post about AI, so they can follow up. And or visit my website, prompttech.ai.
Yep.
All those courses are listed on my platform, and any opportunities, anything coming up in the future, all the events that we are attending or we are hosting, we will announce either on LinkedIn or on our website. So, yeah, I mean, the best thing is LinkedIn.
Yep.
If they want to find
fantastic
more information about my platform. Yep.
Fantastic. We'll leave links to all of that in the description.
Yep,
so feel free to go follow Amir on those platforms. So for our listeners, I hope you found today's episode as enlightening as I did. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the AI Willpower Business podcast on your favorite platform and leave us a review. Your feedback helps us bring more valuable content to you. If you're interested in how AI can revolutionize your business, be sure to also check out willbot.ai for more information on how we can help your business start implementing AI effectively. Stay tuned for our next episode. We're going to have another amazing guest on. Thanks for listening and see you next time on AI Willpower Business. Thank you, Amir.